We're very honored to have John Coleman with us tonight. I don't think he needs much introduction. He's been on the radio in Phoenix just a couple days ago. He's founded the Weather Channel. He is the weatherman. And we hope that one of these days soon, he's going to sue Al Gore and take him on. And please welcome John Coleman.
Okie doke! I'm here and I'm ready for the great debate. Bring on Al Gore. Let's go. Where is he? Bring him on. I'm sorry. For a moment there, I forgot. Al Gore says the debate is over. Strange thing. Maybe I had a senior moment, but I don't remember the debate ever happening. Al, times have changed. We're going to have that debate. I say it's not happened yet. Now, if Al were to come out here, you all know what he would say, don't you? Oh, I do. The future of our civilization is in the balance. We must act now, or life on this planet as we know it, it will come to an end as a result of anthropogenic global warming. The polar ice caps are going to melt, and the oceans will rise 20 feet, inundating the coastline. The cities will go underwater. 100 million people will be refugees. Numerous Pacific islands will be totally submerged and uninhabitable. Global warming will disrupt the circulation of the ocean currents, dramatically altering the climates of the world, throwing food supplies into chaos. Global warming will turn hurricanes into superstorms, and so on and so on. In the years since Mr. Gore began his scare tactics and started to lecture us about how we should live the rest of our lives to dampen the calamity, as he calls it, of global warming, every one of his statements, has been proved wrong, dead wrong. And the basic science behind the global warming scenario has been proved invalid. Some of the very best work in doing this has come from the scientists who are here tonight, from the presentations that are clear and straightforward. They have made the case that significant man-made global warming is not happening. And I want you to please stand up and be noticed and accept our applause for your important work. Dr. Willie Soon, Dr. Arthur Robinson, Dr. Noah Robinson, Dr. Fred Singer, stand up. We love you. We honor you. They're too shy to stand. And I also want to thank this organization, the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. You have provided a forum for some very notable scientists through the years. And I can't tell you how important that is to people like me. Thank you very much. An outlet for scientists is rare and difficult, and one where they are respected and honored, listened to, and can mix with we the people is spectacular. Okay, now, are we ready for the ultimate debate? Come on, Al Gore, come out here. Man, am I ready. Your Nobel Peace Prize and your Oscar and your Grammy, they are in the balance. And your $100 million, Al Gore, or is it $200 million? It's not enough to pay the damages, not close. But while we're waiting for Al Gore to come out, which may be a fairly long wait, I guess I should, I know, you know, he'd just go into a sky is falling rant. So why don't I go into my rebuttal? Here it is. There is no significant man-made global warming. There has not been any in the past, and there is no indication, no reason to believe that there's going to be any in the future. The climate of planet Earth is changing, however. It has always changed. But mankind's activities have not overwhelmed or significantly modified the climate of Earth, the natural forces. Now, through all history, Earth has had two basic climate regimes. You know what they are? Ice ages and interglacial periods. That's what the paleoclimatologists call it, interglacial periods. So for the past 10,000 years, planet Earth has been in an interglacial period. And we just as well call that nature's global warming. Because what happens during an interglacial period is the Earth warms up. The glaciers melt, and life on Earth flourishes. Our life flourishes. It's beautiful. Clearly, that is a whole lot better from our point of view than facing the deadly rigors of an ice age. But Mr. Gore and his crowd are going to try to make us believe that the activities of mankind have overwhelmed nature during this interglacial period and are producing an unprecedented and out-of-control warming of the planet. Simply not happening. Worldwide, we had quite a bit of a natural warming trend in the 1980s and 1990s. The scientist may be slightly cautious about it. As a student of theirs, having read everything I can, I am thoroughly convinced that was nothing more than the peaking of a solar cycle, with a very active sun, lots of sunspots and solar flares. And that ended in 1998. And now the sun has gone quiet and fewer sunspots. And I am thoroughly convinced that global temperatures have gone into decline. Oh, it's tough to get good figures because there are manipulators and liars. There are inaccuracies. But I am convinced, having compared the four primary sources of global temperatures and watched them carefully over the last several years, that this Earth cooling has been going on for at least 8 years straight. So I ask you, Al Gore in absentia, but I ask you, where's your global warming? It's like the old lady that asked, where's the beef? Where's your global warming, Al? I see the bun, but I don't see the warming. The cooling trend is so strong, and you may have heard this too, maybe not, because the media doesn't cover this sort of thing. The head of the International or Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change, the UN organization, had to acknowledge this cooling trend. And he speculated in his remarks that nature seems to have temporarily overwhelmed mankind's warming, and it may be 10 years before the warming resumes. Oh, really? Now, we're supposed to be in a panic about global warming. Man-made global warming. Going to end life as we know it on this planet. And he says it's on a 10-year holiday. If this weren't so serious, it would be laughable. But this is serious business. When I talk about global warming zealots, you know who they are, and we run into them. I get 92 positive, supportive emails for every 8 that are critical. But those 8 that are critical, boy, do they let me have it. And the main thing they say to me is, you're no scientist. You don't have a PhD. So what do you know? And my answer to them is, you're correct. I am not a scientist. I am a mere meteorologist. I do have 55 years experience forecasting the weather every day. Every day for 55 years. I have watched the weather and the climate, and I think that counts for something. And I have studied hard. And then I say to them, please note this. Your great global warming guru, Vice President Al Gore, doesn't have any scientific credentials at all. Let's look at it. He went to Harvard. How many classes did he have in natural science? How were his grades? But here's the story. Al Gore was there at Harvard when the great Roger Revelle, the grandfather of global warming and an esteemed and fine professor and research scientist, was at Harvard. And Al Gore was lucky enough to be in his class, or unlucky enough, as it may turn out, when we're all done with him. And so Revelle had his students help him process the data from his research project on CO2, carbon dioxide. And Revelle was preparing a paper that said this buildup of CO2 from man's burning of fossil fuels might be creating an increase in the greenhouse effect in the atmosphere. And that was as far as it went. And that was as far as Al Gore's education on global warming went. That was it. This is living proof of the adage, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So that was, I think, 1957. 67, 77, 87, 97, 2007. For 51 years, that little knowledge has been used to scare the bejesus out of us. Shame on you, Al Gore. Shame on you. You've had your science advisors, but you're the man who has been the master of it. And that's where you got your knowledge, from that little brush. Now, as you heard this afternoon, for those of you who are in the afternoon session, in 1991, a year before his untimely death from a heart attack, Roger Revelle, the godfather or grandfather of global warming, co-authored an article with Dr. Fred Singer, who's here tonight and a man I greatly respect, cautioning that CO2 seemed to have a limited greenhouse effect and did not warrant extreme countermeasures. Al Gore didn't listen to his old professor. He just went on with his rant. Meanwhile, a colleague of Dr. Revelle's, Dr. David Keeling at the Scripps Oceanographic Institute, where Revelle had returned as director, set up a system to make continuous measurements of CO2 in the atmosphere. And the graph of those measurements has become known as the Keeling curve. And when David Keeling died in 2005, his son Ralph, also at Scripps, took over those measurements, and they're still continuing today. And when you watch Al Gore's movie, and he climbs that ladder because he's distorted a graph that should be about like this, but if you compress the time period, you can make it like this. He had compressed the graph so Al Gore could climb a ladder to get up there on that graph, and told us that this was Earth has a fever. Well, what does the Keeling curve show? It shows an increase in carbon dioxide, CO2 in the atmosphere, from 315 parts per million in 1958 to 385 parts per million a year ago, an increase of 70 parts per million, about 22-23%. So is that a problem or is it not? Now, I want you to understand that is absolutely the crux of this scientific debate. All of this rhetoric, all of these thousands of papers, all of this research, all of this data, all of these scientists, and it comes down to this, nothing more. Does the buildup of CO2 in the atmosphere create man-made, dangerous, runaway global warming? And so I think that's what we have to really look at tonight. because if CO2 does, then Al Gore's right, and we have a crisis. And if it doesn't, Al Gore is full of prunes. Now, there's quite a bit that could be said about this. It was asked this afternoon, how did this global warming thing get started? That's how it got started with Al Gore, Revelle's class, and that simple fact about CO2. And it's been everything that's followed. But there was another side to it, too, and that was at the UN. And that has been studied and documented by some pretty serious people who have done some heavy-duty work to figure out how it all got going. And they have names and dates and places, and I won't bother you with the details, but it turns out back in the late 60s, they had a couple of things in mind. One was one world government, and the other was how do the lesser nations, the third world nations, elicit payments from the developed nations and get them on their knees and passing the money out. They decided that global warming was the answer. This is how they could exercise their force against the major nations, claiming that the major nations, through their burning of fossil fuels to power their civilized and advanced cultures, were indeed destroying the planet of Earth, and they owed the lesser nations money. And the lesser nations would take that money, and we'd have this whole process of one world government. And the first event that they sponsored was World Earth Day in Stockholm, Sweden in 1970. And the kind of a cabal got there, got together, and they had several meetings after that. And I think it was 84 then that they established, I think Fred might correct me, 84, I think, they established the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Now, I don't want you to think that that was a scientific research organization, because it wasn't. It had a political and environmental agenda from the beginning. It had a hypothesis. Global warming is being caused by CO2. It got the Revelle paper as well, and it was using it. And it was based on that and the Keeling curve. This was it. And from here, they were ready to go. So what they started doing was passing out, getting grant money, passing it out to all these different scientists. Now, take yourself as an example. Let's say you decide, and when you're in high school, you want to be a climatological scientist, a meteorologist, do research. So you spend 10 years in college, and you build up $50,000 in student debt, and you get out of college, and you've fallen in love and married a woman. Or if you're a woman scientist, you've fallen in love and married a man. And you got a mortgage, and you got kids. And you get a job at a university doing research, or at a university or some foundation-related research group. And you get a grant, and you do research on global warming, and say CO2 isn't important. Nothing's happening. There is no crisis. Career over, student loan unpaid, mortgage fails, wife leaves you, children think dad's a failure, you become a drunk, and you're dead. Or you crank out the paper they want. It gets published in the journal. You get invited to join the IPCC. You get invited to go to Bali like they went, you know, a year ago, or to some other exotic place for a meeting. You get to stand up and do your PowerPoint presentation. Wear a suit. You want to teach class. You're a big guy. And you get your money. Money keeps flowing. Do you think that this old weatherman here might have a hint of how it all happens? Or is he just kind of wacko? I think I know. There's a huge pressure to produce the science that they're paid for. And it happens. And it happens in this country and all around the world. And then you have to defend it. And then you have to defend it. So you defend my paper, give me a good peer review, I'll give you a good peer review. And the club forms, and the syndicate tightens, they throw their arms around each other. The old boys club of science. And folks, I'm here to tell you, that's exactly what's happened with the IPCC. Now, we hear about the 2,500 scientists who are in consensus. Well, first of all, there never were 2,500, maybe 2,200. Second of all, they were split up into three panels. Third of all, a lot of them were bureaucrats. Some of them were, heck, some of them were members of Greenpeace and sent by the Sierra Club. And almost all of them either had a political or environmental objective. Pure scientists there? Except for Fred. I don't know anybody else. And so they got what they want. Here is my message. Hello, Al Gore. Hello, UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Your science is flawed. Your hypothesis was wrong. Your data is manipulated. And may I add, Al Gore, your scare tactics are absolutely deplorable. The Earth does not have a fever. Carbon dioxide does not cause significant global warming. I guess I'll take a minute on the science, though we understand I'm not the PhD. But here's the deal about CO2, carbon dioxide, in case you haven't got it. It's a natural compound in our atmosphere. It's always been there as long as the Earth's been here. It is absorbed and emitted by the oceans. It comes out of volcanoes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And very importantly, it is used by every living plant on Earth, every tree, every bush, every flower, in every field, every corn stalk, every wheat shaft, every blade of grass. Nothing would be green, there would be no life on Earth without it. And oh yes, we humans, we create it with every breath we breathe out. When we breathe out carbon dioxide. So, it's not a pollutant, it is not smog, it is a naturally occurring invisible gas, and let me illustrate. I'm going to make a little square in front of my face here, and I estimate that there are 100,000 molecules of atmosphere in that square. Of those 100,000, only 38 are carbon dioxide. 38 out of 100,000. That makes it a trace element. Now let me ask a question. How can a trace element totally upset the climate of planet Earth? Answer, it can't. And this is what all of that science at the IPCC is about. Thousands of pages. Computers, models, you wouldn't believe how many times they had to run them before they got the answer they were after. The whole thing is to try to turn a trace compound into the magic bullet that destroys Earth. That's the whole, it's been the whole scheme. That's all they've been trying to do. And they have failed, and the reason they've failed is because it can't be done. They come up with what they call radiative forcing. Somebody will tell you about that. Well, it's not real. The tipping point. It's not real. What they're trying to say is that because it has some special interplay with water vapor, which is 95% of the greenhouse gas on planet Earth, that this little bitty trace compound somehow manipulates the water pressure, the water vapor, and makes it six times more greenhouse effective. Well, that's wishful thinking on their part. It doesn't happen. I dug my way, and it was hard work for me, through thousands of pages of the IPCC report, all their research documents. I'm an old-fashioned meteorologist. I graduated from college in 57. We didn't have a computer yet. I don't have a hint. Fred back there, he's a mathematician. Noah, he's genius with math. I have a damn hard time getting through these formulas. But I struggled because I wanted to understand. I wanted to be sure that if there was something there, I got it. and there was nothing there but blah, blah, blah. So then how did they get a computer model to predict that global warming is going to send the temperature of Earth soaring and melt the polar ice? Well, here's what they did. They started the computer model back around 1980. And they said, if it runs right for the first 10 years, and we get the right output of it, we know what's happened in these 10 years. As I say, this is 1990. Though then we can assume that it's right after that because it has predicted the past and we know what the past is. So they put all that in and they found that if they made the sun a constant and didn't count the sunspots, made no adjustments for ocean currents or sunspots, kept all of that current, man, it showed the whole warm-up through the 1980s. And it was still working good in the 1990s, and they were getting pretty cocky about their output. But they were totally out of line because they ignored the big picture of Earth's climate and the complexities of the pattern. And now that we're at 2008 and the warming isn't taking place anymore, the Russians have bailed out. The Canadians are asking questions. The Japanese aren't sure. I am told 100 scientists have hopped off the IPCC, and things have really changed. So, I want to admit this about CO2 and the internal combustion engine, cars, gasoline, all that. Man, when they first made cars, the internal combustion engine and gasoline just left a god-awful smoke shield behind them that was full of pollutants. And the automobile was still a heavy-duty polluter right up into the early 1960s. I mean, that smog that hung over our cities, that was the real McCoy. Have you noticed how it's thinned out and pretty well disappeared? Because we got serious, and this was important. I'm an environmentalist. I want clean air. I want clean water. I want to save my planet. And we had to clean up that internal combustion engine. We couldn't continue to leave that trail behind us. And man, have we done a great job. Totally re-engineered the engine. The old-time mechanic can't recognize it anymore with its injection and its ignition system. You know, we got rid of all the old-fashioned stuff. And then we put the catalytic converter on it. We put a lot of filters on it. And then we reformulated the gasoline. And then we re-engineered it again. And we tightened up everything. And now, there's not much comes out of that exhaust except water vapor and carbon dioxide. So if carbon dioxide is not causing global warming, then what kind of a case does the global warming crowd have? Answer, no case at all. It's done. But wait a minute. We still have this huge global warming phenomenon going. I mean, it sweeps the country. And I think this is probably the most fascinating part of the whole story. The hoax of global warming. The incredible scam. I think it's the greatest scam to sweep the earth since Hitler scammed the German people into thinking the Aryan race was superior. And he got away with that for a while. It collapsed, thank God. But this global warming scam, how long is it going to go? How long is this hoax going to... How did this hoax happen? So we know how the IPCC came up with its thing. We know how Al Gore came up with its thing. But how did that turn into what we've got? Well, the other part is the environmentalist. Love of Earth is a wonderful thing. It's like a religious fervor with a lot of people. And for those environmentalists, the thought that they could battle the internal combustion engine and the power plant and the fossil fuels on the back of CO2 buildup was a godsend. And they joined the battle. So now we got Al Gore, we got the environmentalists, we got the UN. all going. Oh, Hollywood jumps aboard. Oh, now we got Hollywood. Now we got Hollywood, Al Gore, the UN, environmentalist. The media takes a look at that and says, "We're man, you're saying we got a big scare that the world's coming to an end, the sky is falling, Chicken Little and all that? We want to be part of that. Killer bees, KY2, anything we can come up with that's a threat to mankind, we want to publicize that one." So the media jumps aboard. And Al Gore's powering that bus and it's getting crowded. Well, if you got the media and Al Gore and the UN and the environmentalist and Hollywood, which is good enough for millions, what do you think the politicians are going to do? Oh, yeah, global warming, baby. They climb aboard. And it was last fall. I knew all this was a scam. I knew it was wrong. I knew all of this. I'd been studying and studying. Just a little student, a little tired TV weatherman. Enjoy my being on TV, and it's a lot of fun. Had a great career, Good Morning America and all of that. You know, famous network guy. Started the Weather Channel, turned $14 million into $3.5 billion. Man, I've done it. I am. But I can't stand the global warming thing. I just can't stand it. So I wrote a rant. Global warming, it's the greatest scam in history. And I wrote about 3 pages and posted it on the KUSI website. And my friend Joe DeLeo, who had been the original director of meteorology at the Weather Channel and had worked for me at Good Morning America and was a great friend and mentor of mine and taught me most of what I know, and you can tell it's fairly limited. Joe posted what I wrote on his website, icecap.us, and if you haven't tried that website, you've missed a great website for science. And then Drudge picked it up. And first thing I know, I'd become a cause celeb in the battle against global warming. Well, all I'd done was get madder than hell. I was a little like Howard Beale in the movie Network. CNN declared planet in peril. NBC turned off the lights on the pregame football show, and I threw open the window and said, "I'm madder than hell, I can't take it anymore." And the whole thing was started. Well, it's been an amazing ride for me since, but I felt very, very lonesome out there. And then I discovered various scientists who agreed with what I was saying, who supported what I was saying, who were my mentors, and they weren't all quiet. And I started counting on the websites. Oh, there's 125 scientists listed here. There's 50 listed here. And then Mark Morano on the Senate website came up with 500 scientists, and I felt pretty good. And then Arthur and Noah and Willie and your stamp licking came up with the army of 31,000 scientists, 9,000 PhDs. And now I feel like the guy in the Verizon commercial. I got the network behind me. Hey, Al Gore, can you hear me now? Oh, this feels good. But, oh, we've got a huge battle ahead. How do we... CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, the Associated Press, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the LA Times... President Bush, Senators McCain and Obama, most of the senators and congresspeople in Washington, and almost every governor, including my governor, Arnold, what's his name? Man, I may have a network of 31,000 behind me, but man, we're up against a monster. How do we come up to this? When that 31,000 was announced, and I haven't had a chance to talk to Arthur about this yet, He went to Washington and he held a news conference at the National Press Club to announce it. Did you hear about it? Did you read about it in the Associated Press? No. Was it in the Washington Post, the New York Times? It was on CBS, NBC, ABC. Did anybody show up for your news conference? Six hangers-on hoping for free hors d'oeuvres or at least soft drinks. How do we get heard by the American people? How do we reach them? What can we do? Well, I went to this New York conference, and the people at Heartland, God bless them, they threw this first conference for we skeptics on global warming in New York on the first couple of days of March. And there were 100 of us who made speeches, and there were 600 people, that's all they had room for, in attendance there at Times Square. We didn't get any press coverage to speak of either, but we at least we united and met each other, and it was a wonderful experience. But in my speech, toward the end, I speculated, if nothing else, I guess we could sue Al Gore. Well, what media was there immediately jumped on that. First question after the speech, you gonna sue Al Gore? Well, I made the point that if he won't come out and debate, even little old me, a worn-out, tired old man meteorologist, if he won't come out and debate, if his science advisor, the highfalutin, unhinged Jim Hansen, won't come out and debate, if the guys at Scripps there in San Diego, where I now live, won't come across town to debate me, and we've invited them over and over again, if they won't debate, maybe we should take them to court. If we did, and we charged Al Gore with fraud on behalf of the people of the United States, and we're all damaged by this global warming frenzy, couldn't we be, wouldn't CBS, NBC, ABC have to cover it? If we got a good jury and we put Arthur and Noah and Fred and Willie on the stand, and they put their guys on the stand. We presented our papers, and they presented theirs. We'd win. We'd win. And the media would notice. I have very good lawyers working on this. I got my fingers crossed that the money flows and we make it to court. Because this is the only way I can see that we can tip the scale in the near future. There's one other way for this to resolve itself. The environmentalists who have controlled our energy policy for the last 40 years in this country and who have bankrupted us with our incredible $6-7 billion a year balance of trade failure on energy to the Mideast countries and made rich sheikhs and a poor indebted America. If those environmentalists who have kept us from building refineries and drilling for oil or mining coal or building nuclear plants, if those environmentalists continue to control the policy as the next president is elected and the next Congress is elected, if they continue and we all are paying, and they say it's the average American, I'm average, I don't know about you, I think you're above average. The average American, $16 a month carbon footprint, I got to pay it to Al Gore and his bunch. They want my money. The EPA is issuing a rule. They say they're coming for it. Do you know that? That rulemaking is coming out. We're beginning to ask, they're asking for comments. So the other way this could happen is that the $4 gas, which has just about brought our nation to its knees, turns into $5 gas, and our economy continues to slip and slide and fall, and we go from downturn to recession to depression to abyss. In 20 years, I might be broke, desperate straits. But at least I could go down to the beach and stand there, and there's no flood. There's no great warming. Temperatures have not gone out of control. The Arctic is still frozen. The polar bears are still living. Al Gore's nowhere to be seen. And I could have the last laugh. And what a laugh it would be, because I would have lived to be 93. Thank you very much. I will entertain a few questions. This young man has a microphone for those who want to ask. I don't know much, but I'll try.
Do the European governments buy this global warming scare because they want a pretext for a global tax for a global country?
Well, yes. But remember, the president of the Czech Republic is on our side. The one world leader made an eloquent speech in New York and has stepped up. And I think there are a few little cracks in the veneer, but there's no question that there's plenty of hate America out there. And because we use a way out of percentage of fossil fuels, and they think fossil fuels are causing a problem, I know they're not. They'd like to get us.
In your consideration of action against Al Gore, I think a very strong case can be made that he should have registered as an agent of a foreign government. He's taken in millions from his hedge funds in England.
I will tell my high-priced lawyers that one. I think they may tell me to go take a coffee break. We'll see. I would like it very much if they can come up. I don't want to go to court and lose. If we go, we got to win. And so it's really important that the research be very careful and that the case be solid.
Yes, sir. You were critical in your remarks of President Bush, of John McCain, of Al Gore. You didn't say anything critical of Barack Obama.
Well, I mentioned his name is on the list.
He was on the list?
Oh, you bet he's on the list.
Who are you voting for?
I would never tell you that. I'm a journalist. In addition to being a meteorologist, I work in a news department, and I have been a journalist for 55 years. And I am very careful to keep my politics out of the office. I will tell you, in our office, I'm at a unique TV station, and while the media is 85 to 90% liberal, there's a real balance in our office. But yet, we had a news reporter Monday morning on our newscast report the death of Jesse Helms, and a black producer who happened to be on camera in the background as the man finished the story with Jesse Helms dead at 93. She went, "Yes." So much for the objectivity of news, but I try hard. I wouldn't tell you who I'm going to vote, but you bet I'm going to vote. You bet I am. But do I have a horse in this race? No. And am I totally cynical about Washington? Those of you who live in Washington and work in that Washington environment, I have a feeling if I had $1 billion, I could go to Washington and get any law I want. If I don't have $1 billion, there's no way I can get any law, no matter how good it might be. I'm very cynical. I'm sorry. Next question.
Have you tried getting on C-SPAN?
No. It's really an interesting thing. The media is pretty shut down to me, except for talk radio. And I do 2 or 3 talk radio shows every week, sometimes 4. I was on talk radio here in Phoenix, as you mentioned, day before yesterday, I think it was. Yesterday morning, I was on the talk radio in Denver. Monday morning, I'll be on talk radio in Minneapolis. So I'm on talk radio somewhere in the country almost every day. I get lots of invitations from internet. And that speech that I made in San Diego in mid-June to the Chamber of Commerce, in which I said Al Gore is responsible for the $4 gasoline. That speech was linked to my name on the Drudge site. And last time I looked, 550,000 people had come to that speech. Can you imagine that? So I've got the internet. We got the internet. We got talk radio. Talk radio is wide open to us. Rush Limbaugh talks about me. He's talked about me about four times now. And I was interviewed on his program by a substitute host. I've been on with Glenn Beck. Fox News has used me and Fox Business Channel has used me a couple of times. But that's about it. The major media, Washington-based, I don't think there's a chance. My local newspaper in San Diego thinks I'm scum. Anybody else? If not, go ahead. We'll run a microphone over to you so you can, because you're 20 feet away. I might not be able to hear you.
I would think that the Asian countries, particularly China, as you know, and India, would have a great need for debunking this whole theory, given their desire and need to rapidly industrialize their country and therefore use a lot of carbon. How do they account that we don't hear much from them?
Well, beats me. I wish I had I don't have an answer to that. You know, we know this is true, but I have not. I think here's probably the truth, that we depend on our major media to tell us anything that they might say, and the major media is not going to tell us. That's my guess. The major media, there probably are things being said that we don't know about.
They were exempted by Kyoto Protocol.
Yes, they were. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is why they don't care.
That's true. That's true. I hadn't thought about that. Another question?
I like your statistics. You know, the air is 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, and all the other gases are trace. But I just remind the students I'm with that the skies are blue because of nitrogen, and I think that is a simple point to make, especially here in Arizona.
I left that out, and thank you.
Actually, one of the major newspapers, I forgot which, it might have been the Wall Street Journal yesterday, reported that the Indian government stated that they would not accept any emission limits. They intended to industrialize and use just as much carbon as they need to try to catch up with the United States or the other industrialized
countries.
Yes,
they say that, but they don't say, and by the way, there is no global warming. Because I think they probably agree with my assessment of the science. Anybody else? All right, I'll take one more.
One more. This will be the last one.
Okay.
Bill Snyder from Colorado. There's been a lot of comments about the huge sums of money. Cork Hayden, in an article in the Energy Advocate, talked about HSBC and the $100 million cash gift that they gave to four environmental groups in the United States. How do we combat the kind of power that that represents?
I don't have an answer other than this lawsuit idea, and every time I'm about to get some money to support that legal action, they get scared. The thought of suing Al Gore is pretty scary to a lot of people. So we keep working at it. The reason I came to this conference was because I greatly honor the scientists you have had as speakers in the past, and I greatly honored and wanted to be in the presence of the scientists who you have here today. And I can't thank the DDP enough for letting me be your speaker for the banquet this evening. It's an honor, and I'm humbled by it, and thank you.